This episode of the UAV Digest is sponsored by GoEngineer, provider of design, engineering, and 3D printing solutions for the aerospace and unmanned vehicles industries. To learn more, visit the UAVDigest.com/GoEngineer. You're listening to episode 67 of the UAV Digest. I'm Max Flight in Hartford, Connecticut.
And I'm David Vanderhoof in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Hey, Max, how are we today?
Very good, David. And I see this episode, we're devoted entirely to news items. I know we have some more clips from the NBAA panel that we've played the last couple of episodes, but we'll hold those and pick up on that again in the future.
Yeah, that's good. But there was a lot of news this week. So I think we better get started. And the topics we'll be touching on tonight is the U.S. Navy's favorite UAVs need and are getting upgrades. The Ohio FAA test site is up and running, even though they're not an official test site. Precision Ag as a college course. News gathering with UAVs becomes news. And the UAE sends in the UAVs to the rescue. Our first news story tonight, folks, is from in situ. This is actually from defensenews.com. And in situ launches the new Scan Eagle 2 UAS, a outgrowth of their very prolific and very well-respected Scan Eagle.
Yeah, the Scan Eagle is quite a popular UAV. I know, David, that it's used not only by the U.S., principally the armed forces, I guess, but also a number of other countries also fly the Scan Eagle. And we see a new model, the Scan Eagle 2.
And Boeing and in situ they're gradually growing the aircraft. The Scan Eagle 2, this is a quote from Ryan Hartman, Scan Eagle 2 will shepherd us into the next two decades as we focus on reliability, affordability, and enter the civil commercial market. Again, that was the president and CEO of in situ, Ryan Hartman. So they've made a couple of changes, but the biggest change, and I'll throw this over to the engine engineer, was the new engine.
That's right. This is from Orbital, and this is an engine that's specifically engineered for UAVs, and it generates power measured in watts of between 100 and 150 watts of power, which is, I guess, David, a big increase over the current Scan Eagle, the version 1 Scan Eagle.
Yeah, I mean, they're looking at it as all of these UAVs have lots and lots of electronics and need power besides propulsion. And 100 to 150 watts of power over what a current Scan Eagle has is 60 to drive its electronics is a major change. One of the nice things is the wingspan is the same. However, the fuselage is slightly longer. But the way they designed it is it still can use the current Scan Eagle infrastructure, like the Scan Eagle catapult and Skyhook recovery system.
And we also see much longer endurance on the Scan Eagle 2.
Yeah, up to 24 hours getting into Predator and Reaper class for a smaller airframe. So it'll be interesting. And the Navy uses the Scan Eagles and the Coast Guard off of ships. 24 hours of patrol time or 20 hours of patrol time with backup is a really good time for a ship-based system. So we'll keep following as the Scan Eagle 2 progresses.
Now, the Navy's in the news in another area as well.
Yeah, this is about the Triton, which is the MQ-4C, which is the naval version of the Global Hawk. The biggest difference between the two airframes is a different wing to handle higher stresses, because the Global Hawk tends to go to altitude and stay at altitude because of the BAMS or mission, which is broad area surveillance for naval things. The MQ-4C tends to change altitude a lot. And if they need to go find a sub, it needs to drop quicker. So it's got a higher, it has a higher stressed wing. But that's not what the Navy is looking for right now with that.
Right. We see that the Naval Air Systems Command, NAVAIR, they've been unable to develop a good sense and avoid radar for the Triton. And so they've issued a request for information. They're looking for something that they don't really have for this UAV right now.
No, evidently Excellus, which is a spinoff of from ITT for government contracts, canceled their contract to develop this SAA, the Sense and Avoid Box. However, the Navy has decided to broaden it out in a way that they want a scalable system that they can deploy on multiple airframes, not just the Triton.
And that makes sense, too. I mean, let's get some efficiencies out of the design and out of the cost. So I think that kind of makes sense. I don't know what the timeline is on this. So if they're just issuing a request for information now, that sounds like we're a few steps away from actual procurement. But we'll see.
Yeah, I mean, I think they want to get the specs down on what the box is going to look like or what the box is supposed to do. So it's interesting because the Triton, the second one, was just delivered to the Navy. So, but it does have ramifications for all of the export Tritons that are going out there. Australia is going to buy them, and Germany is going back to look at the Global Hawk. So both countries are going to fly them in more competitive environments or more active environments than the United States is flying them in currently. So anybody who comes up with this box will benefit for exporting, too.
All right. Now, we can move, I guess, from the Navy to a couple of educational institutions.
Yeah, the first one was, and this was from ZenaGazette.com, WSRI conducts its first test flight of UAS aircraft.
This is Wright State Research Institute, right, David?
Yes, that's correct. Thank you. And interestingly enough, what's really interesting about this story is a certificate of authorization was granted by the FAA for the Wright State to use a SenseFly EB to do 3D imaging to use the drone to create a simulator for drones. But what's really interesting about this is it's a certificate of authorization given to a test site in Ohio that was up for one of the six test sites.
Right. It was proposed, but not accepted by the FAA. And so it didn't become one of the official six.
But the FAA is granting them authorization to go forward and doing testing, which is unique, which is interesting. It brings back to the question of then why do we have the six test sites? But the flights took place at Wilmington Air Park, which is 1,900 acres with two runways. And the area was convenient because it's around Wright-Patterson Air Force Base. So there's several military or MOAs, military operating areas in the area.
And WSRI didn't actually themselves pilot the EB. 3D Aerial Solutions did the piloting. And I guess that's probably under the terms of the COA, the COA.
But moving on from that, we see this was from Dayton Daily News. Sinclair sees UAS payoff in future jobs. Sinclair Community College in Ohio sees a coming boom in unmanned aviation opportunities, so they're investing millions to help train a UAS workforce.
They are spending money. They spent over $5 million, according to the article, on curriculum, on flight simulators, and more than 50 UAVs, primarily small ones. We also see that the college is going to use its field house to serve as a large indoor unmanned aerial vehicle flying range, I guess the largest in Ohio.
And Sinclair will open a national UAS training and certification center using $5 million of their own money and almost a match, $4 million from state funds. So they're getting in competition with Embry-Riddle and the University of North Dakota, who have currently established UAS programs.
Right, and they're serious about this. The Dayton Development Coalition Executive Vice President of Aerospace and Defense, Maurice McDonald, he says that training and education and certification of people will be able to operate and to be able to maintain these systems, that's a key element. So we are, it's interesting, we are seeing some of these educational institutions, David, take some serious action and put their money where their, you know, where their mouth is, I guess.
Investing in their future.
Investing in their future. And that's exactly how they see it, right? It's not only a future for the from the education and the training perspective, but also in terms of preparing people for employment in this industry, and also for, along with that, for jobs creation for their states.
So let's move a little farther west and a little up north to Lake Region State College Precision Agriculture Center in North Dakota. And they want to have their graduates to have UAV skills. This was from prairiebizmag.com.
Yeah, in North Dakota, what the school did is, I guess they did a little research, and they find that in North Dakota, the average farmer spends about $1.3 million per year planting and harvesting crops. And they see that UAS and satellite mapping, can precision agriculture, could cut those costs between 6 and 16%. Which is that's a significant amount when you're trying to chip away your costs.
Yeah, I mean, agriculture is not cheap even. But right now they have 47 students in a 2-year program, and basically they're treating it as a tool, not a hobby. This is definitely something to further your ability to grow better crops, faster crops, healthier crops, and keep your costs down.
Yeah, reading the article, it's kind of clear that the representative from the school is trying to make the point that, you know, this isn't just a bunch of folks out there having fun with quadcopters and so forth, that this is viewed, as you say, David, as a significant tool, as a serious tool, something that is really of benefit or can be of benefit to farmers, and we've seen that perspective again and again. So yeah, this is a big area, and I hope that, you know, this kind of gets off the ground. I know, I think I did that once before, but you know, moves along really well, really quickly, because the opportunities here are really significant.
Yeah, I mean, precision agriculture, we still need to do more with, but it's clearly, that's where it's going to go. But let's go back to the mainstream media wanting to use drones for news gathering. This was from our friends down under at abc.net.au. The ABC, the Australian Broadcasting Corporation in Australia, has developed a project to develop and regulate their use of drones for journalism.
Yeah, I got to give them real props for this. Now, there are some proposed changes to Australia's Civil Aviation Safety Authority, CASA. These rule changes would allow low-risk operations, and that would make it significantly easier for the media to use drones for news gathering. And to their credit, ABC has developed a 3-day training course for camera operators. And you know what? They really pick up on the big items. This 3-day course covers air safety rules. Oh, that's good. Privacy policies. That's also good. And actual flight training. And they're using Phantom 2s.
And first of all, let me say thanks to Tony, who sent us this story. But the ABC policy will prohibit using small drones over bushfires because the high winds, low visibility, and possible presence of water bombing aircraft. So they're actually looking at where and actively telling their people where not to do this. Even though it might be the greatest shot on the planet, it's not safe. So good to the ABC, and hopefully CASA will follow along.
Yeah, this is so impressive, David. You know, corporations sometimes, you know, look at technology or look at things from a certain perspective that is maybe a little bit remote or detached. Reading this article makes it sound like ABC in Australia has someone working for them or with them that really understands not only the opportunities for journalism that are offered by UAVs, but also someone who understands what the issues are and, you know, wants to do this properly, do it right. And so that's, I think that's just fantastic.
Interesting. Just as a side note, not to steer us off course, but here in the United States on Monday night, or Sunday night, Nick Wallenda walked in Chicago between two buildings at, I don't know, some at night. And he did it, one set of buildings he did up an 18-inch climb. The other side he did blindfolded. But what was really interesting was they asked him about practicing for it. And his comment was, the hardest distraction was the drone that was videotaping me, which was really kind of cool. It was sort of like, it was just a throwaway line. But you know what, folks? It was a throwaway line that nobody really perked up about. So maybe our dream of drones becoming mainstream are becoming mainstream.
Very good.
And definitely they're used, speaking of tall buildings and people hanging around them in wires, this is a good segue for me. Drone used to rescue window cleaner dangling up from tower block. This was from 7daysindubai.com and was sent to us by Ben. And the window washer basically had a cab fail, the cart that they were riding up and down the building in. And the UAE police decided to send up a drone, and the first thing the drone did was, using a speaker system, calm the worker down.
Yeah, I understand that he was kind of on the freaked out side. I think he was, wasn't he hanging on to the window because he was worried that this this window washing cab that goes up and down was going to
fall out from under him.
So, yeah, so you've got a panicked guy. I mean, I would be scared to death up there, and what a great application! And this had a speaker on it, huh? They could actually communicate with the worker.
Yeah, well, it gets better. Not only did they communicate the worker calm down, but they used the quadcopter's camera to survey what the problem was, and determine that the worker could fix it. So our little drone hovering over, kind of like R2-D2, a 21st century astromech droid, basically talked the gentleman into fixing the system so he could get back down to the ground. So this is kind of a phenomenal story when you think about it, that a little quadcopter saved the man and calmed him down and told him how to fix the problem, and, you know, R2-D2 lives.
And I bet, you know, if he was not really enthusiastic about drones before this little event, I'm sure he's a big fan now.
So, great story. Really interesting. And good to the UAE for moving ahead and trying to find uses. And that was just one of those, good for them. Now, here in the United States, we would have had the FAA to have to authorize the COAA. And the poor guy would have been up there for a couple of days, but we would have got him down.
Now, this article also mentions something about a contest, doesn't it?
Yeah, there's evidently a Drones for Good contest that's for $1 million, and that ends up in December. The results are going to be in. So hopefully this little quadcopter gets eligible for the bonus.
All right, now let's see. What do we have, David? We have a sort of a breaking news item. This just came in.
This just came in, and I keep asking the boss of the show that we need breaking news music, but he refuses to come up with that. This is actually, we got this from Peter today, a couple hours before the show, and it was a November 6th press release, and it was from the Canadian government. And during the 12th Annual Conference of Unmanned Systems Canada, Transport Canada's Director for General Civil Aviation, Mr. Martin J. Eli, described the upcoming steps in the evolutionary of the regulatory framework of UAS aircraft systems in Canada. Now, we already know that Canada's a little ahead of the curve and has something called a Special Flight Operator Certificate, which means you basically, it's a pilot's license for drones. Well, they've backpedaled a little bit, and if the aircraft is under 2 kilograms, A special flight operator certificate, or an SFOC, is not necessary, and they will allow some under 25 kilograms. So they're letting, while our FAA here is trying to rope in the hobbyists, Canada is saying, no, the hobbyists should be able to monitor their own selves, and they should be fine.
Well, I like the sound of that.
But there are rules. If they're over 25 kilograms, they have to be operated with a special flight operator certificate. And if you get caught not having the SFOC and operating a 25 kilogram airframe, you can get fined up to $3,000 Canadian for an individual and then $15,000 for companies. And that's in Canadian dollars. So they're saying, okay, we're going to let the hobbyists play, but the people who are in 25 kilograms is getting into a heavy-duty quadcopter or an octocopter. Those are people doing it for business purposes. Mm. And if you get caught doing that and you don't have the certification, there are going to be penalties. And I don't have any problem with that.
Yeah, I think that's appropriate. I think the Canadian government is taking the right kind of approach here. That sounds encouraging. I mean, as you say, David, this just came out, and maybe upon digesting this a little bit, taking a little more detailed look at it, it might have some different opinions, but certainly on the surface of it, this looks pretty good.
Yeah, good for Canada and Australia. And boy, you know, it's one of those regulatory weeks where we just scratch our head about what the FAA is doing. But
someday, David, we'll have a great episode where we get to take a look at the FAA's recommendations for the under the NPRM, and hopefully we'll have as much excitement over that as we'd have over seeing in Canada and Australia.
And also, I'd like to get someone from Unmanned Systems Canada on the show. If there's somebody, I'm going to reach out to Susan Chapman, who actually is the communications contact. See if we can get somebody from, and see how they do it up north.
Very good.
So, all right. Our favorite segment, video of the week. You want to take this one, boss?
This came in from Mark Lebrowski, Bisbee Sky, Drones on Demand. And Bisbee is B-I-Z-Z-B-Y. And what we have here is an on-demand drone service. The idea is that you would use a smartphone app when you want to have a drone come pick up some package and deliver it to some other place, that you'd get on this app and call up the drone, and it flies. It doesn't carry, at least the ones that they're testing don't carry very much in terms of weight. But you'd insert whatever it is you want to send and program in the coordinates, or somehow tell this what the address is, and this thing would autonomously go off and deliver the package. Interesting. This is in the UK.
It's Uber for drones. Anybody who knows what Uber, the car service, is, it's causing lots of controversy here in Philadelphia, where you dial up and a car magically appears. And, you know, we for years, if you've lived in New York City or you've been in New York City, there's nothing worse than a taxi except a bicycle delivery guy who's darting in between traffic going down Broadway. Now, can we imagine a bunch of drones doing that in Manhattan? It's kind of futuristic, but it could happen.
Yeah, and, you know, it's kind of interesting that, you know, the skies at these kind of altitudes are pretty open right now. So it's easy to imagine some kind of a delivery service like this. But, you know, when you start layering on top of this other delivery services from other companies, other applications for UAVs at low altitudes, and, you know, the sky could become pretty crowded pretty quickly. So I think that's kind of an issue.
But not to mention all the frequencies you need to keep them flying.
Right.
So, you know, we could always dream for the days of Star Wars and Corsican, where you see highways upon highways of of flying aircraft. You know, wait a minute, we were supposed to have flying cars by now, weren't we?
Yeah, we were.
And lastly, we'll touch on a little bit of feedback, and this was from Tony Davis, who sent one of us articles earlier. I noticed they had attached in a flyer titled "Flying with Control" on the counter. It was produced by CASA, which is the Australia organization, and outlines the rules to apply to model aircraft and UAVs. It also directs you to the Model Aeronautics Association of Australia and CASA's RPA websites with more information. So clearly the hobbyist world is getting on board with regulations and trying to avoid their people from getting in trouble.
In this flyer, it's just a little two-page flyer, and it talks about, quote, important safety information. It says, congratulations on your purchase. Hope you have a lot of fun with it. But a few things to remember for everyone's safety. And they point out a couple of things. They say you must only operate this aircraft in your line of sight in daylight. And you must not fly closer than 30 meters to vehicles, boats, buildings, or people. Also, you must not fly over any populous area, such as beaches, other people's backyards, that's a good one, heavily populated parks, or sports ovals where there's a game in progress. And also, it says that if you are in controlled airspace, which covers most Australian cities, you must not fly higher than 400 feet. You should not fly within 5.5 kilometers of an airfield. And then it closes basically saying that it's illegal to fly for money or economic reward unless you have an unmanned operator certificate issued by the Civil Aviation Safety Authority, CASA. So I think this is a great idea. And I think, you know, others, and certainly here in the U.S., I think could benefit by having this kind of, you know, sort of rules of the road, as it were, rules of the air, maybe. Available to people, and maybe DJI and other manufacturers, particularly the mass market ones, should put something like this, you know, in the box. I think that'd be a great idea.
Or the sellers can also take it upon themselves. You know,
right?
We used to have, when I worked in the hobby shop and we sold a radio controlled airplane, in it was an application for the Academy of Model Aeronautics. And everybody would be like, "Well, why do I want to join that?" And my first response was, they guarantee you $1 million if you crash your airplane into somebody's house. So for that reason alone, it was worth the 20 bucks.
For the insurance.
For the insurance. So, I mean, we're an industry. We need to just keep getting the information out. And Christmas is coming, and there's going to be a lot of people buying drones this year. Keep in mind that your two favorite podcast hosts would love to have DJI Phantoms. But
good try,
but besides
David.
But besides that, we also want everyone to fly safely, and you're constantly talking in politics about low educated voters and low knowledge voters, and UAVs are kind of getting to be the same way. There's an opportunity there for low knowledge people to do some seriously bad things with drones, and not necessarily on purpose. They just don't know. So it's definitely important that we keep communicating. And when someone buys a drone, you know, or a small UAV, you know, hopefully they'll understand what's going on.
Yeah. And I think we who are a little bit more aware maybe than the average member of the public as to what the issues are, the safety issues, the privacy issues. You know, I think that increasingly there's opportunities when we see a friend or a neighbor acquire a quadcopter or something of that sort. That, you know, I think it's okay. I think it's a good idea for us to step in and just, you know, kind of help build a little bit of awareness that may not be there. I think that's something that we could all do.
All I want for Christmas is a DJI Phantom, a DJI Phantom, a DJI Phantom. Gee, if I could only have a DJI Phantom, then I could videotape Christmas.
All right, David. I think, David, with that, we should wrap this one up. I want to thank you for listening to episode 67 of the UAV Digest. You can find us at theuavdigest.com. If you'd like to go straight to the show notes, the quick shortcut is theuavdigest.com/67. We'll have links to the news items, the companies, so forth that we mentioned in this show. We're also on Twitter. You can follow us there at UAV Digest.
And, of course, we have a Facebook page, which is facebook.com/UAV Digest. And don't hesitate. We love reading them. We might not get back to you right away, but we do read everything. And that's our email addresses, which is feedback@theuavdigest.com. Or if you want to be specific, it could be david@theuavdigest.com or max@theuavdigest.com. And if you listen to Stitcher, to us on Stitcher, leave us feedback so people can find us when they're streaming them to our phone and iTunes. But most of all, we'd love for you to pick up some swag at our cafepress.com store. And if you'd like to help us fund this little organization, we have a patron account. You can get that directly to us through our website, theuavj.com, and click the donate link. And I think, Max, we're going to have to start setting some goals. You know, maybe if we get $25 per episode, we'll have a drawing for a t-shirt. What do you think?
Ah, that's a great idea. Yeah, let's create a little incentive and do something like that. I like that idea, David.
So, okay, as of now, the executive decision was made. So if we get, we're at $19 an episode, but if we get to $25 an episode with donations, then we'll have a drawing and someone will get either a Cafe Press certificate if they don't want, or we can get them a UAVDigest.com t-shirt.
Very good.
So with that, I'm David in Philly.
And Max in Hartford.
Thanks for listening.
This episode has been sponsored by UAV Propulsion Tech, a provider of propulsion, servo, and rescue and recovery parachute solutions for the unmanned aerial vehicle market. For more information, check out www.uavpropulsiontech.com.